Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Somehow, somewhere along the way, Democrats lost substantial numbers of rural voters as they have gravitated toward the Republican Party. It's been frustrating for Democrats who believe that they have a lot to offer voters outside the cities. In fact, they would say they have more to offer than the GOP and assert they can back it up with their record. But that will take some convincing, and when the North Carolina Democratic Party elected Anderson Clayton as their chair in 2023, she vowed to gain traction with those voters. But how to do that? What messaging is necessary? How much convincing will it take to persuade rural voters to choose a Democrat over a Republican? Can those efforts really turn a red state blue or an even bluer shade of purple? We're going to talk about this hour from WFAE's Uptown Center for Community Engagement with Chris Cooper. He is the director of the Hare Institute for Public Policy at Western Carolina University and author of the forthcoming book, Anatomy of a Purple State, a North Carolina politics primer. He drove all the way down here from Cullowhee. Thank you for being here. Welcome back to the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mike.
You're very welcome. And Nathan Dollar also drove a fur piece to be here this morning. He's director of Carolina Demography at UNC Chapel Hill's Carolina Population Center. Thank you for joining us, too.
Thank you for having me.
Cynthia Wallace is co-founder and executive director of the New Rural Project. That's an organization focused on making sure the voices of rural young people and those of marginalized residents are heard. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And old-timer Steve Harrison is with us. He's WFAE's political reporter. He's been reporting on these efforts around the state extensively. Steve, thanks for being here. Good morning.
Of course. Good morning.
Nathan, I'm going to start with you because you're the demographer here. And let me talk about this for a second, because I looked up the definition of rural. Mm-hmm. The U.S. Census Bureau defines rural as an area that is not urban.
That's correct.
Not helpful. So how would you define urban versus rural?
Sure. Well, we use the Census Bureau's definition as well. And so the Census Bureau previously, prior to 2020, defined it strictly by population density. And so it was an area, usually a census block or a tract, that had less than 2,500 residents. They switched that they raised it to 5,000 residents for the 2020 census, and they added a housing unit density. We use the Census Bureau's definition. So a census tract or a block that has less than 5,000 residents, and I think it's 2,500 housing units, if I'm not mistaken.
There have always been people who live in the rural areas, always people who live in the cities. They obviously, Cynthia, have different needs because it's a completely different world for those people. But there's never been this deep political divide like we are experiencing in this country. Do those, and we keep hearing that people in the rural areas feel left behind. Have we left them behind?
I think that's an easy answer, that it's yes. We hear that a lot. You know, folks in rural places never see these big candidates very often. And even more so with the pandemic, because folks kind of got sheltered in their homes. And so those usual places like the church or, just school events kind of languished for them. But that's literally why the New Rural Project was founded, because we were hearing from folks that, you know, they felt unseen and unheard, especially those black and brown voters and folks in rural places. Because when people say rural, a lot of times they automatically think white. Mm-hmm. They don't recognize the diversity that exists in rural. I was born and raised in rural southern Georgia. And three of the counties that we work in, Union, Hoke, and Robinson County, are actually majority minority counties today. And multiple of our counties are also much higher in a diverse population than even the North Carolina state average. And so those folks just don't feel like their needs are being heard and that their interests are being addressed. And they feel like they've been disinvested in.
Hmm. You mentioned that not everybody in the rural areas is white. Many of them are minorities, black and Hispanic, and other Indian, Native American. But those areas of the country seem to be the politically populated by Republicans, and yet Republicans appeal fundamentally around the country, we are told, to white voters, while Democrats appeal to black voters. North Carolina Democratic Party Chairman Clayton Anderson, or Anderson Clayton, I always get her name backwards, was on our program back in September of last year, and she said it's more complicated than just race when you're talking about this. It's about addressing issues a diverse group of people care about, and she admitted that her party, the Democratic Party, had left behind rural areas and the people who lived there.
People oftentimes, I think, equate rural right now with white in North Carolina, and that's not true. North Carolina has the second highest rural population besides Texas in our state, and it's because North Carolina has a history of manufacturing towns that have existed all over our state, and it's something where we have dense and diverse rural communities that deserve to have actually, I think, boots on the ground impact from the Democratic Party, because we've left behind black and brown voters in eastern North Carolina, and I think white working class voters in rural western North Carolina.
So, Steve, have Democrats under her leadership made any headway with those voters, or does that remain to be seen come election day?
So they've made a tremendous effort in terms of trying. Anderson Clayton, for instance, was just in western North Carolina on a rural listening tour, visiting counties. We will see, obviously, in the election what happens. But in terms of looking at how people are registered to vote, people who belong to the Democratic Party, the party is really struggling. There are 100 counties in North Carolina. I went back and looked, compared, you know, now to 2020. I think 22 of those counties have lost 20% of their registered Democrats in 4 years. It's been a pretty stunning loss of people who are willing to be a part of the Democratic Party under President Biden. I think that may shift a little bit with some more enthusiasm with Vice President Harris, but the raw numbers show a real uphill battle.
Is that because, Chris, Democrats have this national reputation of appealing to urban voters and urban causes, and they're more liberal than many people living in rural areas where the communities are more close-knit, they're probably more associated with church-going, their needs are different, and the Democrats are perceived not to have interest in or to meet those needs? Or is it more? Is that too simplistic? Is it more than that?
I mean, it's definitely more than that, but I don't also think that's too simplistic. I think everything you said is absolutely right, right? Perceptions matter in who parties listen to. I think the Democrats have also been been somewhat successful anyway, running some campaigns focusing on urban areas, right? The idea that it's about turnout, not persuasion, means if you're the Democratic Party, you're going to lean into Mecklenburg County, you're going to lean into Guilford County, you're going to lean into, you know, Durham County, you're not going to lean into Swain County, you're not going to lean into Graham County. So that is definitely part of it. I think the other piece here is that the Democratic Party dominated the state in terms of party registration for a very, very, very long time. And so the people at the tail end of the electorate, let's just say in terms of chronology, in other words, the tail end of the lifespan, tend to be registered Democrats. So when they exit this mortal plane and exit the electorate, those are Democrats exiting without somebody else coming in. And we know that these new registered voters are much more likely to be unaffiliated. So it's about both sides of the equation, right? Yes, it's about not adding new Democrats, but it's also about losing Democrats at the tail end of the lifespan, right? There's just not that many very, very, very old registered Republicans and very few very old registered unaffiliateds.
So, Cynthia, you heard Clayton Anderson a minute ago talk about how the Democrats maybe failed. Did I get her name wrong
Anderson
again?
Clayton.
Anderson Clayton. It's going to happen every time. Anyway, you heard her a moment ago say that the Democrats have failed in some ways, rural voters. If you agree with that, and you can tell me if you don't, tell me how Republicans have helped them.
Wow, that's an interesting question. I wanted to just piggyback off some of the conversation about what's happening with party registration. We've looked at that quite a bit in our 7 counties. And when you break it down from a racial perspective, you don't necessarily see black voters actually in these, the seven counties that we work in, which is Union, Anson, Richmond, Scotland, Robinson, and Hope counties, actually fleeing the Democratic Party. You do see that in white voter registration in these rural places. You actually have seen from 2008 to 2020, we did a lot of kind of review the Obama presidency in races and the basically the Trump races. And what you actually saw with AAPI voters is actually a reduction in registered Republican. But in every population, you've seen an increase in unaffiliated. I think that's where, and when you look at the voter registration form, I was we registered a few folks yesterday in Rayford, a 20-year-old, a 30-something-year-old black men mm-hmm. were excited to register to vote just less than 24 hours ago. And so we're seeing some momentum, but I think we also, the biggest issue we're seeing in these voters is not necessarily how they are swinging, at least in the non-white population, it's turnout. In 2008 and 2012, our young black voters, 18 to 40, were leading the pack in terms of turnout. And so organizations like ours and other folks really have to lean in on those folks.
But I really want to try to get an answer to that other question that I asked a second ago that you skillfully avoided.
No, I'll go back to it. I apologize. I'll go back to it. It was actually a big topic of conversation yesterday at the beauty salon in Rayford, which was what's happening with our school system.
Okay.
And a lot of folks in that salon, they were concerned about the funding of the school system and the dollars that are actually going to charter schools and not going into public education. And there was a big conversation about who was responsible for that. And it was very clear to the folks there, or some that even were getting educated, that the current party in power in Raleigh is the group that's taken away that funding from these public schools. And we were literally sitting in Hoke, which was the home of the Leandro Plan. Mm-hmm. The original Platum came from there.
So if that's the case, if the people are now believing that the Republican Party are diminishing the public education, they're putting these money into opportunity scholarships, which they can't fund properly, so people who have qualified can't get them, they're opening more charter schools, taking money away from the public schools. Tell me what Republicans have done for people who feel left behind in these rural areas. They gravitate toward voting for Republicans, so clearly they believe they're making a good choice for them, but what have they done? What did they talk about? Chris, do you know?
I mean, I certainly know what I hear and what people talk about in rural communities, like those in Western North Carolina where I live. I mean, I think there's a sense that the Democratic Party is not paying attention to them, right? So there is the idea of, you know, coming towards a party, like coming towards the Republican Party, or this idea of negative partisanship, right? That I vote for, you know, Party A because I really don't like Party B, more so than I'm excited about Party A, right? So in this case, that I'm a rural resident, it's not that I love the Republicans, it's that I'm really mad at the Democrats. And the idea that the Democratic Party is leaning into urban spaces, leaning into urban places, and they feel like, well, there's another party that isn't. There's another party that's out here. There's another party that's paying attention. There's another party that's organizing. And I think part of this, and Steve's done really good work trying to get it, you know, the idea of party organization in these counties. And I think that before Anderson Clayton came on board, that the Democratic Party didn't do as good of a job organizing these places. It was almost the idea that they were just not necessary. You know, I live out west. We don't get a lot of political candidates until recently from the Democratic Party coming out west. Heck, we haven't had a president since FDR visit west of Asheville.
So I have 10 seconds. Is it messaging or is it perception?
Yes.
Okay. We have to take a break. We'll come back and more about talk about how this all happened and where it's going in just a moment. Stay with us.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about rural versus urban and wither-whirl politics on this Politics Monday with Nathan Dollar. He's director of the Carolina Demography Center at UNC Chapel Hill's Carolina Population Center. Dr. Chris Cooper is here, the director of the Hare Institute for Public Policy at Western Carolina University. Cynthia Wallace, co-founder and executive director of the New Rural Project. Rural is a hard word for me to say. And Steve Harris, as is Anderson Clayton. And Steve Harrison is with us. He's with WFAE News. He's our politics reporter. Nathan, North Carolina has always been a fundamentally rural state. It remains so.
Absolutely.
And Democrats held sway in spite of that for 100 years until it didn't. What happened?
Well, I think certainly the party shifted ideologically, right? I think Chris would be probably better equipped to answer this question about the dramatic shift that happened, particularly after the New Deal and in the 60s with the signing of LBJ and the signing of the Civil Rights Act. There was a fundamental shift in the South towards the, especially white voters in the South, towards the Republican Party.
And you have a new book coming out, Chris, Anatomy of a Purple State, which would tell me that North Carolina is purple. Are we?
Yeah, I sure hope so.
How purple? Which shade of purple are we?
Which shade of purple, I think, is a legitimate question, right? So just to tackle the purple question in general, that doesn't mean, of course, that we have 100 purple counties. What that means is we have a very small number of very, very blue counties, which are very dense, like the one we're sitting in today, and then we've got a whole lot of red counties, but it averages to something like purple. I think nationally, just recently, again, I feel like the last week, the national press has decided, hey, guess what? North Carolina might be a swing state, a battleground state, a purple state. I went back to 76. We've been called that every election except 84, right? And in 84, if you remember, that's the election where Ronald Reagan won basically everything that wasn't Minnesota and Washington, D.C. Nothing was swinging that year. If there's a possibility of a swing, it's going to be in North Carolina, right? So of all the states that Trump won in the last election, his margin was the smallest in North Carolina of any of them. 2008, the last time we went for a Democrat for president, of all the states Barack Obama won, the margin was the smallest in North Carolina of any of them, right? We're always right on that razor's edge. Mm-hmm. And I think the national media tends to oversee this winner and loser, which of course makes sense. That's where the Electoral College votes go. But in terms of trying to understand what the people are telling us, we're smack in the middle of the country.
So urban areas, including Charlotte, that tend to vote primarily Democratic. We have two elected Democrats in Mecklenburg County, and they're both on Charlotte City Council. The county commission is entirely Democratic. Rural areas gravitate toward Republicans. Why? Is it because of economics? Is it because of race? Is it because of messaging? Is it because of the media people in these various places consume? What's the cause?
Well, I think, going back to what Chris said, I think a lot of it is that all politics are national these days. Used to be, Tip O'Neill said, all politics are local. That's completely changed. So people take their cues from MSNBC or Fox or whatever. The national politics kind of sets the table. Everything follows from there. And I don't think people are paying as much attention to local issues as much as they were. It's kind of a cultural thing. Who do you identify with? Like Chris talked about, like, well, the Democratic Party, they seem to be, when I see them on TV, they seem to be getting support from big cities. And the people I know in my community, in my carpool, I know whatever, they're Republicans. So I think I think it's just a big cultural thing. And, and I'll say one more thing about North Carolina. We talk a lot about the big growing cities and the rural areas. I think there has been a kind of a twist in the last few years is that we are a very popular state for retirees. And so you look at places like Western North Carolina, the beach, we have a lot of older retirees coming into the state. They are very Republican, and that has kind of, I think, helped the GOP stay a little bit ahead of the game.
Nathan.
Yeah, just to echo what you were saying, Steve, you know, North Carolina has several counties, Brunswick being one, several counties in the western part of the state, Carteret County, that are destinations for what we refer to as amenity migrants. These are these folks that are moving for quality of life, typically wealthy, whiter retirees, mm-hmm. right? And so these are folks who have wealth, who are white and are old. So they tend to vote Republican. They like the, I can't speak to their ideology related to the culture wars, but they certainly like the tax policies of the Republican Party, without a doubt. In our latest analysis, which was last year of voter registration data, the Republican Party in North Carolina tends to be overwhelmingly white. 94% of registered Republicans are white, and they tend to be demonstrably older than unaffiliated and Democratic voters as well.
Go ahead, Cynthia.
I would just follow up. One of the, you know, I think that may be happening in general, but when you look at Mecklenburg County, where we are, and South Charlotte, you know, as you were talking about the fact that all of the county commissioners in Mecklenburg are Democrats, which from 2018, that was not the case, but things totally flipped. And a lot of South Charlotte, which also has a lot of people that are migrating here, has actually turned pretty blue. And that's not based on African-American voters. And even when you look at suburban Union County, when you look at 2020, Union County, when you look at the map, excuse me, of how the people, the votes change from 2016 to 2020, trending blue versus trending red, Union County was actually one of a small number of counties in the state that actually trended less red. And that's because you are seeing those suburban Mecklenburg areas where people are leaving Charlotte or moving into mm-hmm. Union County are actually shifting. So I don't think it's a one size fits all about what is actually happening in terms of who's moving here and even how the vote is shifting.
You spent your career, Cynthia, as I understand it, in business and banking. You spent some time in Paris. You ran for Congress when you came back to the United States. And you discovered in the course of running for Congress that a lot of people simply don't vote. Whether they're registered or unregistered, they just don't vote, which I think is one of the reasons that led you to form this a new rural project. Why don't they vote? And if they voted, would they be Democrats or would they be Republicans?
So what we, as you mentioned, you know, we did a lot of work looking at who actually showed up and who didn't. Because I think you need to register more voters, but there's so many folks that are just sitting on the sidelines. And in only the 7 counties that we work in, almost 60,000 black and brown folks sat out the 2020 election. And as most folks know, or many maybe don't know, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court race here in North Carolina in 2020 was decided by 401 votes. So we know there's an opportunity. And so what we hear from folks in terms of why they don't vote is a lot of folks just feel like their vote doesn't matter. Like 5 of the 7 counties we work in are among the most economically distressed in North Carolina. And so they feel like, you know, I've voted and how has my county, how has my town changed? The other thing, when we've done some polling and we've done focus groups, what is the actual largest thing that would cause someone to turn out to vote was actually knowing the candidates. 80% of the folks we polled said knowing the candidates would actually make me want to vote. A 22-year-old yesterday in Rayford said, the candidates are always bickering and they're divisive with each other, and that turns me off. And I said, and I think back to what Steve said, people think the candidates means people you see on TV. And that was the point we made. And we had 3 elected officials sitting in the salon that were all black women. The first city councilwoman in the history of Rayford, won in 2023. The first black woman to represent Cumberland County in the state Senate was on that panel. And the first black woman from Hope Mills to represent them in the House of Representatives. And the point I made to them is, these are the candidates you see. Do you see them bickering? And so I think one of the problems I think that's happened is people equate voting to just president or the folks who are on TV and not those local folks who really have even a bigger impact on their lives.
And it seems to me, Nathan, that you vote for your favorite candidate or your favorite party because of something that you agree with them doing, something that they're going to do that will help you in your life. So when you look at rural voters versus urban voters, is there a substantial difference in what they need and what they want to make their lives better?
I would say probably not. I would say that the rural North Carolina faces issues slightly different than many of our urban places. And one of the big things with respect to demographic change is aging in our state, right? I've already mentioned that. Some of that is due to the in-migration of older folks, but that overall, that's a small portion of the people that are moving here. Many parts of rural North Carolina are losing population, and that's because fertility has been below replacement since the Great Recession, and there's out-migration. And so the places that are growing in population, most of the in-migration tends to be in our urban areas, and that is from other states, other countries, and then also rural counties. And so many of our rural populations are hyper-aging. They're getting older really faster, which puts extra burdens on the healthcare infrastructure. And so I think that, and also the working age population that's there for economic growth and to work those jobs. And so I think that the rural places face issues that many of our urban places are going to face in several decades.
I would suppose that the aging of the population or people who gravitate toward Republican Party who are older are doing so because of this whole Make America Great Again thing, which is a look back to a time, whether it's mythical or not is up to you, I suppose, but it's a time when things were better, in quotes, and not like they are today. And yet presidential campaigns, I keep hearing, are not about the past, they are about the future, which has helped Kamala Harris because she is talking about things, she's talking about hope and change, the old Obama thing.
Mm-hmm.
How will that impact rural versus urban voters in this state? Are the rural voters just gonna stick with the past, or are they gonna be excited about somebody who talks about the prospects for the future?
I'll defer to Chris on that one.
Okay.
All right. Looks, did you have your hand up? I'm sorry.
I'll jump in after you.
Oh, good. No, I mean, will they respond? I don't think that Kamala Harris is going to radically remake urban-rural politics in the state of North Carolina. And I think we need to remember, too, to sort of set this in time. In 1992, it was actually the urban parts of our state that gave larger proportions of the vote share to the Republican candidate for president than rural. In other words, urban was more Republican, rural was more Democrat, right? It was like opposite day. As recently as 1992, as recently as 2000, Mecklenburg County voted for George W. Bush, the Republican candidate for president. So this is actually more recent. I think we now take it for granted that, oh, of course, if it's rural, if it's a low density, it's going to be Republican, and if it's urban and it's high density, it's going to be Democrat. And that's actually pretty recent. I don't see Kamala Harris fundamentally changing that, which is not to say I don't think that that change was important. We're already seeing in voter registration numbers that actually the Democratic Party is getting a little bit of an uptick for the first time in, well, a decade or so. But as far as urban-rural, I don't see it as a radical shift. I also don't know, too, that it's necessarily past versus future. I think in today's nationalized politics, like Steve talked about, sometimes it's really just about identity in the present.
But it, Nathan, if people are aging, and most of the people who live in the rural areas are aging and they're moving out, some people are moving out, young people are moving out toward the urban areas, what does that portend for state politics in the not too distant future in North Carolina?
I think it's a mixed bag. I mean, you've got, you know, to echo Cynthia's sentiment that the rural voters are not a monolith, and certainly urban voters aren't either. I think it remains to be seen. So, for example, there are places, even the places that have lost population, they have gained population in foreign-born and Latino voters. You know, for example, Sampson County has the highest percentage of the overall county population that is Hispanic or Latino, followed by Lee County, and also Duplin County has the highest, followed by Sampson and Lee, forgive me, all rural areas, right? And so the citizen voting age population of Latinos or Hispanics in that area is growing and will continue to grow more rapidly. And so it remains to be seen how rural-urban political alignments are going to shape, play out in the next few decades in North Carolina.
And I just like to say, I mean, I think, and I appreciate you making that comment. I think we, when we use the word rural, I mean, we once again, I think, try to make them a monolith.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're talking about rural voters on the North Carolina-South Carolina border, you have more diversity than maybe other parts of the state. And I can just tell you what we've been hearing in the last, feels like it's only been 2 weeks, right? 2 weeks since the 21st.
5 years.
Feels like, right? And I will say what we've been hearing has been a lot more enthusiasm and excitement. I've been in North Carolina since 2006, and this feels the closest to 2008 that I've experienced. What we've been hearing, and I think, I can't remember who said it, but what we actually been hearing, especially from younger voters, is that they're excited to have someone they can vote for versus just voting against. And so I think, we're only 2 weeks in, but we are seeing that, and we're seeing, the misinformation is probably something that's a lot larger than it happened, than it was in 2008 and 2012. I've heard young black men actually pushing back against their own peers with misinformation that they said the owner of our beauty salon, when we came back 1 week after the Kamala Harris announcement, he literally said to me, he said, someone said this, and I didn't think it was true. And so I did my own research. And then he went back to his 30-something-year-old black male friend and said, here are the facts about VP Harris. And we didn't tell him to do this, but them doing their own research and talking to their own peers is where we're going to see a change potentially in this 2024 election.
So Steve, rural, urban aside, this election is going to come down to turnout, and it's going to come down to unaffiliated voters. It's dangerous to talk about numbers on the radio, but we're going to do it anyway. The number of unaffiliated or independent voters outnumbers both Republicans and Democrats in North Carolina. Here, unaffiliated voters make up 37.5% of the population. 31.7% identify as Democrats. 30% say they are Republicans. So given GOP control of the legislature and the fact that voters have vacillated between voting for Republicans and Democrats at the presidential level in North Carolina, what does that say about the power and the real political leaning of people who identify as independents? And you have 40 seconds.
Well, for the Democratic Party, their great hope are unaffiliated voters, because they've lost so many registered voters over the last 10, 12 years. And they have. They have made up some of these losses with unaffiliated voters. Young people who move here, who choose to not identify with a party, that is really, their hopes lie entirely on voters who choose not to pick a side.
We're going to continue down this dangerous path of talking about numbers when we come back in just a couple of seconds. We're talking about politics and the urban-rural divide in North Carolina on Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
It's Politics Monday on Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with WFAE political reporter Steve Harrison. Dr. Chris Cooper has joined us from Western Carolina University, Nathan Dollar from the UNC Chapel Hill Carolina Population Center, and Cynthia Wallace, co-founder of the New Rural Project. Steve, you recently reported that North Carolina has become more conservative since 2020, and the number of Republican and white voter registrations is surging. I'm going to assume that that's before Kamala Harris declared, because I'm understanding that as a result of that, her voters, our Democratic voters, are surging. But talk about that for a second.
Yeah, talking about the Harris piece, we are seeing a little bit of enthusiasm on the Democratic side. For the last couple of weeks, the Democrats have added voters. That hasn't happened all year. But going to the Republican Party, they, I think, have added about 161,000 new voters who've signed up as Republicans since the summer of 2020. I think that about equals the amount of new voters they picked up in like the 12 years before. So the Republicans are on a great run under the Biden administration. They've got people who want to join their party. Again, Democrats are going to say, yes, but we are going to do well with unaffiliated voters. That is the big hope. And it becomes harder and harder in this state to make predictions based on registration, I mean, I think it can tell you a lot. I think it's interesting, it can tell you a lot, but because the number of unaffiliateds keeps getting bigger and bigger, and we don't know a lot about it, and we were just talking during the break that when people register to vote now, an increasing number not only are picking unaffiliated for their party registration, they are not choosing their race, they are not identifying their ethnicity. So we can kind of see like where people live and how old they are, but there's a lot we don't know.
So when it comes to unaffiliated people, and the number is rising not just here, it's nationwide, is that because the parties have not effectively communicated to these people, or is it because in some states, like North Carolina, if you're unaffiliated, you get to choose the primary you vote in, so you can kind of throw a wrench into the works, if you want to, for the other party with whom you really don't identify? What's really going on here, Chris?
It's a yes and day for me. I think it is that, and it's a little bit more than that, right? So the institutional piece is definitely there. We have what's called a semi-closed primary system, which means if you're a Democrat, only vote in the Democratic primary, Republican primary, unaffiliated, hey, guess what? Choose your own adventure. It's interesting, if you track from when we started unaffiliated as a category in 1977, nobody chose it for years and years and years. And the reason is we had a closed system. The Republican Party was the first party to say, hey, unaffiliateds, why don't you come over to our party, too? We'll allow you to vote in our primary. The Democratic Party at that point said, no, stay out. It wasn't until 8 years later where the Democrats finally said, unaffiliated, you can vote in our primary, too. And at that point, it was off to the races. So it is partly about institutions, and I think it is partly about a general dissatisfaction with the political parties, fair or unfair. And it's a little bit, I think, frankly, about the incredibly polarized time we're living in. It's pretty easy to look up voter registration, right? While we're having this conversation, you could look up mine. It's unaffiliated. I'll save you the trouble. The point is, if you're applying for a job, the fact that you can find that and that could keep you out of certain kind of jobs, I think leads some people to cover their partisan affiliation because it is publicly available information.
So along those same lines, Nathan, because we're a growing state, I think we've gained around 1 million new registered voters in North Carolina since 2013. Now, these numbers could be wrong, but in that same time, the number of registered Democrats has declined from over 42% of people identifying that way to just over 32%. And the number of unaffiliated voters rose from around 20% to around 36% or more, eclipsing the Democrats. Mm-hmm. And the number of Republicans has remained kind of flat. It hasn't really fluctuated all that much. All while the diversity of unaffiliated voters has increased. There are a lot more. It's not just black and white. It's black and Hispanic and Native American and Asian and other aspects of the population. What is that doing to the purple complexion of North Carolina?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, first, to touch on what Steve was talking about earlier, we got to be really careful with analyzing the racial and ethnic data that's in the voter registration data, because I think it's a third. Is that about right? A third of all of the registered voters that come out in the State Board of Election voter registration data are missing data on race and ethnicity. So we just don't know. So, I mean, that's a lot of missing data for any kind of analysis. And so we got to be careful there. I think what Chris was saying earlier about people, there's various reasons why people don't want to affiliate. There may be disenchantment with the parties, maybe keeping their options open, perhaps wanting to vote, although I would venture to say that there's less strategy involved with, I'm going to vote in the Republican or the Democratic primary. But I think that most of the people that are moving to the state are working age, because most people who move globally are working age, right? And so fertility has been on the decline. We've got people moving in. We've got increased racial and ethnic diversity. So I think that you're probably going to get deeper purple as we continue to progress.
Is that blue purple or is it red purple?
I think that remains to be seen.
Okay. Right?
I think the level of, if you don't mind, the level of purple versus blue versus red, it literally boils down to turnout. In the 2020 election in the state of North Carolina, there was over 1 million registered voters that were black and brown that didn't show up at the polls. And so imagine how different this election was, even if the distribution of the electorate was like 2008 and 2012. I think we'd have different results. Mm. And so organizations like ours, and even I know the question about Anderson Clayton, the chair, one of the things we're finding also is we have been canvassing in our rural counties, because our focus is Black and Brown, Hispanic, Native American, AAPI, and African American voters, we actually go to doors and they're like, oh, the Democrats have actually been here. And in the 3 years that our organization has been around, in the 3 years we've been canvassing, this is the first year that we've actually gone to doors where the Democratic Party might have been there before.
Yeah.
So there are some things that are, and we're not just going to Democratic doors, we're going to doors of these Black and Brown voters who are a larger majority are registered Democrats. And so there is that potential overlap. And we are hearing that they actually are seeing people talking to them at their doors.
People are ensconced in their camps, and nobody wanted a rerun of the 2020 election. And now they're not going to get it because Joe Biden has decided not to run again. And Kamala Harris has put her hat into the ring. And clearly she is the presumptive nominee of the Democratic Party. And that's changed everything about this race. And we're seeing nationally an uptick, Steve, in registrations for Democrats. But as a result of her candidacy. Are we seeing that, or do we know, here in North Carolina? And if that is happening, what does that mean for down-ballot races like the race for governor?
So typically in a presidential year in the summer, before the November election, I've kind of looked, both parties tend to add voters, just people get excited and engaged. Republicans have been doing that all year. The Democratic Party is not. They have still been seeing their total number go down. And that's because, you know, people die, people move out of the state. There's not enough new people signing up to replace them. That was the case all through the summer. The week after Harris essentially became the nominee, Democratic registration went up by like 440. Not a lot, but it went up for the first time. In a long time, and then this past week it went up another 700. So you could kind of see it really quickly. I mean, that was a change. It's not huge numbers, but you could see the enthusiasm very quickly in those numbers. So I think it's you know, if you're an organizer, whether at the state level or the local level, it's you can knock on so many doors and do the work. But I always kind of like to say it's just so hard to light a wet match.
Yeah.
If people aren't excited about Joe Biden, it's just hard. You know, you can knock on that door 10 times. But suddenly when there's a candidate people believe in, whether it's Barack Obama or Kamala Harris, it just the work gets to be so much easier.
More people throughout the country live in urban areas than in rural areas, and yet because of the Electoral College, Republicans seem to have an advantage in the presidential race, and that means that we have gravitated toward minority rule in this country. And the same is probably true in North Carolina, Nathan, because in North Carolina we have a Republican-controlled legislature with a supermajority with the ability to override every gubernatorial veto that comes their way, and yet there are probably more Democrats in the state than there are Republicans. And in fact, 66%, according to the 2010 census, 66% of the population in North Carolina lives in urban areas. What does this mean for politics in the state? I mean, what is the, are we going to continue to have what is essentially minority rule?
Yeah, so you're correct. About a third of North Carolina's population lives in a rural area, or an area that's not urban, as you would say. It's about 3.5 million people, right? I would say, though, going back to, you know, I tend to not be a fan of the term urban-rural divide. It's more of a continuum. It's really not a 0-1, like, binary. Like, you're either urban or you're rural. And also, just I urge people to recognize the heterogeneity of both urban and rural voters and their preferences and their likelihood of participating, as Cynthia and Steve have mentioned. So I think as far as like what that means for the future, I think it is going to depend on people's engagement, how young people see the leaders and the candidates that are put forth having a meaningful impact on the issues that are important to them, which is going to dictate who they're going to vote for and whether they're going to vote.
Chris.
Yeah, I was just going to sort of pick up on that and the point Cynthia is making before, too, about the heterogeneity in rural areas. I'm looking a lot at municipalities, right? So people who live in a municipality versus in an unincorporated place. So let's grab, just for an example, Swain County, way in the western part of the state. Bryson City is a town in that part of the state, right? So you'd think, well, it's in Swain County. It's probably going to be pretty conservative, right? Well, it's certainly more conservative than Durham, but Bryson City is a lot more liberal, a lot more capital D Democratic than the unincorporated areas outside of town. Sylvan, Jackson County, very same thing. You see that all throughout the state. So a lot of us, including myself, spend a lot of time looking at counties, and we'll say, well, this county is urban, or this county's rural, this county's suburban. And the reality is people who are living in the more dense places, in municipalities, paying local taxes, paying municipal taxes, tend to lean a little bit more left. And I think campaigns haven't quite picked up on this. They'll just say, well, let's, you know, if we're a Democrat, we're going to ignore Swain County. We're a Republican, we're going to ignore Swain County because clearly the Republicans are going to win it. Yes, but there is no electoral college within the state. Those votes in the municipalities.
But there is gerrymandering within the state.
There is absolutely gerrymandering within the state, right? And it's obviously there's all sorts of litigation that tries to get at what's the difference between a gerrymander versus natural settlement patterns. But clearly, yes, if you look at our new congressional delegation, we're going to be 10-3 and a big question mark over Don Davis's district. That's partially because of the way these lines are drawn. General Assembly, clearly much of the same.
So, Steve, the Raleigh News and Observer reported on Friday that the Harris campaign, quote, views North Carolina not just as a potential bonus prize on the electoral map, but the possible linchpin in her path to victory. I think President Biden had one path to victory that evaporated. She has several. Are they delusional, or are they reading the tea leaves rationally here?
No, I think the linchpin term may be a little strong, because if Kamala Harris wins North Carolina, she will probably also have won the three big states in the Midwest, probably Arizona. I think they're here in a way to go on offense, make the Trump campaign spend money. I think you can, Axios had a story just last week where they looked at how much money is being spent in the seven swing states. North Carolina was at the bottom with Nevada in terms of total spend. Pennsylvania is through the roof. So, you know, they are here. The vice president has visited a lot. But when you look at the amount of money spent, I think they are kind of spending in a way, the amount of money correlates with the importance of North Carolina, if that makes sense. Because it was like over $200 million has been spent. It was like seven times as much money has been spent in Pennsylvania on both sides as North Carolina.
So where have Democrats fallen down on the job in terms of communicating or serving rural communities in North Carolina? Because this is the party that brought people civil rights. They bought them the 40-hour work week. They created Social Security and Medicare and the Affordable Care Act, and they reduced the price of insulin to $35 a month. That doesn't seem to be resonating at all in the hinterlands. Why not?
Well, I mean, I do want to just piggyback on what Nathan said as well. Like, when we talk about this rural urban divide, when we talk to rural folks, I think in particular rural folks of color, their issues aren't different than those of East and West Charlotte. They want good schools. They want good paying jobs. And so I think what is, when you say Democrats are falling behind, I think it is, once again, it's about who's going out and who's feeling like their issues are actually being addressed. And some of that is the loudness of the media right now. You know, there's been amazing investments in rural communities with the infrastructure plan and with the affordable connectivity program that allow folks to get high-speed internet. But do people know? Do people either know about the benefits, or do they understand who actually made those things happen in their community?
And if they don't know, whose fault is that?
I think it's a combination. I think it's the political parties that maybe don't boast enough about what they're doing, and also the coverage doesn't really get to that level. It's whoever is screaming the loudest that the media seems to pay attention to.
Do you see any shift in politics resulting from demographic changes that are coming our way because people are moving here, et cetera, and moving around, Nathan?
You know, but we've been saying, I think the Democrats have been saying there's going to be this kind of inherent demographic wave that's going to benefit them for years. That has not, as of yet, played out in North Carolina. I think there's evidence of it playing out in other places, perhaps Georgia, but to date, it hasn't played out in North Carolina.
Nathan Dollar is director of the Carolina Demography Center at the UNC Chapel Hill Carolina Population Center. Cynthia Wallace is co-founder of the New Rural Project, executive director there too. Dr. Chris Cooper, director of the Hare Institute for Public Policy at Western Carolina University, and the author of the forthcoming book, Anatomy of a Purple State, a North Carolina Politics Primer, and Steve Harrison from WFAE News. Thank you all for the hour.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.